Okay. Good evening and welcome, Brother Teo and fellow Buddhist brothers Kalyana Mitras from PJ and Subang. We are glad to have you here with us again. And also fellow Dharma brothers and sisters from the Klang. Tonight's topic here, as you can see on the board, is the importance of Sati or Satipatthana Sutta in the cultivation. Now this sati, I think that is the key point in our Buddhist practice. And not only is it essential in our spiritual cultivation, but it is also important in this worldly pursuit in our daily life. Because sati is just like something that if we have a friend and we treat him well, then he will always be with us next to by our side. But if we neglect that him, then obviously he won't be with us. So that is a simile. So Brother Teo will explain more on this point of sati in the cultivation, which is an essential part of our cultivation. I think that it is the most essential. All right. So as usual, let us take refuge and observe the precept before he takes over. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Panatipata Veeramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami, Adinadana Veeramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami, Kame sumi chachara veramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Mosavada veramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Surame raya majapama dathana veramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu.
Okay. Very good evening, yeah, to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So once again, after about a month, we meet again. So today is 16 September 2016. It's supposed to be a public holiday. So I really rejoice that you all still turn up on a public holiday. So anyway, today's topic is very important. It's a continuation of your last month's topic. Last month we had this topic, understanding the importance of precepts, keeping precepts or having sila, and dana parami or giving generosity parami in cultivation. So we have dealt with that in our previous sharing last month. So today's topic is a continuation. Not only you need sila and generosity or dana parami to help you to develop the cultivation, you also need a very important mind state or spiritual faculty that the Buddha calls sati, mindfulness, translated in English as mindfulness. Sati is very important. If you look at the teaching, the Buddha actually incite the teaching on sati. He grouped it together with heedfulness or apamada. He said all goodness, all wholesomeness, they spin off from this quality of mind that we call apamada or heedfulness. So to be heedful is to be ever mindful. Ever mindful of the cultivation, the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is essentially the Noble Eightfold Path, which also covers the four foundations of mindfulness, satipatthana. That's why today's topic is understanding the importance of sati and the Satipatthana Sutta in cultivation. So now I will just refresh you a bit. If you look into the teaching, the essential Dhamma that the Buddha has taught, what is it that he had explained to the monks at that time? What is the essence of his teaching? Basically, as you all know, it's a Four Noble Truths. Okay? Then from the Four Noble Truths, you like can understand very profoundly the secret of life. Because all of life, mundane and supramundane, they are defined within the Four Noble Truths. And these are truths that can make you noble ones or enlightened ones the moment you understand them. So the first noble truth is the noble truth of dukkha or suffering. And this one explained to us clearly about the realities of life and existence. When you go through life, you go through existence, you will have to confront these eight realities which the Buddha has described them under this first noble truth. And we have gone through. The first four is birth, old age, sickness and death. Then separation from loved one and things that you hold on to dearly. Your possession, your wealth, your reputation or whatever. Then the sixth one is when you are with people whom you don't like. That gives you problem because you can't understand them and you cannot accept them for what they are. Then the seventh one is even more important. When your expectation in life is not met, when you cannot get what you want in life, you will be afflicted. When things don't go your way, you become afflicted, not happy. Then the Buddha summarized all of suffering. Is it? In short, it is due to your self-delusion that condition you to grasp and cling onto this so-called five aggregate of form and mind, the two aspects. The first aspect is as a human being or living being. Then the second aspect is the mental five aggregate whenever you arise any sense or consciousness through your senses. When you perceive something through your senses, either seeing consciousness, hearing consciousness, smell, taste, tactile or thought consciousness. Within this mental, there is also the mental form that enters the mind through your aggregate of perception. So that mental form together with the four aggregate of mind, which is Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana, they will form the five aggregate of Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara and Vijnana. So this five mental aggregate of form and mind is what the Buddha called within the dependent origination as your mundane mind, condition arising mind. And this is the one, through delusion, you grasp and cling and hold. So the Buddha say, it is upadana khandas, or the grasping aggregate, that's the cause of suffering. So when you fail to understand this, and through your own self-delusion, you allow this aggregate, the five mental aggregate, the second aspect, you are conditioned through your self-delusion to grasp and to cling and to hold. That's how you develop suffering, affliction arise. So this final summary is very important. Then everything in life about existence is never apart from the five aggregate of form and mind. Because like the Buddha said, our mind is a forerunner of all things. When mind arises, everything arises. That's why whatever that you experience in life, that you arise through your thought consciousness, these are what we call the mundane aspect of life. That's why I say the Four Noble Truths, they explain clearly to you the secret of life, including all the mundane and supramundane aspects. So the First Noble Truth covers a very wide range of reality. Everything that you experience through mind, through consciousness, is part of this First Noble Truth reality. And you confront them with delusion, without this Dhamma understanding as taught by the Buddha, without wisdom, you will be afflicted. Suffering will arise. That's why this is called a noble truth of suffering, prevalence of suffering, when you don't have the wisdom. The Buddha never said life is suffering. No, never. Then under the second noble truth, the Buddha said there is a cause behind whatever suffering that arises. And again, the cause is craving, which is part of attachment, clinging, grasping, born of self-delusion. So these first two noble truths already so powerful, explain to you clearly what suffering is and under what circumstances it will arise. Then when you understand what suffering is and the cause behind its arising, with this understanding, you will know how to manage your life better. That's how from there the cultivation starts. Then after that, the Buddha didn't stop there. He didn't just tell you your problem. He gave you the solution, the answer to all this problem. So under the third noble truth, he cautioned the monk, he said, there is a noble truth that talk about the realization of Nibbana in the here and the now. The Buddha said, suffering need not be. There is such thing as a realization, awakening, that can lead to the end of all suffering. So the noble truth, the third noble truth of the cessation of suffering, born of awakening, enlightenment in the here and the now is possible. You need not wait till death to realize this enlightenment. Then after that, the Buddha continued to explain. Not only he tell you it's possible, he even tell you how you can realize it. That's like the fourth noble truth, which is the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path, which the Buddha proclaimed. If you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, which he also called the Middle Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. And that is the meditation. So this is the one, Noble Eightfold Path, is the meditation. So to be mindful, to be heedful of this cultivation, is called apamada, or heedfulness. Then under Dhammapada verse 21, the Buddha said, heedfulness is the path to the deathless, whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedful never die, whereas the heedless are as if dead. So you see the importance of heedfulness, apamada. And under the Apamada Sutta, the analogy is, he said, this Appamada is like a footprint of an elephant, where all the other footprints can also fit into it. So in that sense, heedfulness will lead to the enlightenment, because the heedless are as if dead. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. So to have this quality of heedfulness, you must have sati. That's why sati is very important. And sati is also a spiritual faculty. It's also one of the seven factors of enlightenment. It appears a few times. I think not less than 4 or 5 times in the 37 factors of enlightenment. So all this points towards the importance of sati in cultivation. Then you look at the essential Dhamma, the teaching of the Buddha. The Buddha said the Noble Eightfold Path can be classified as 3 parts: Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. Sila is the morality aspect, precepts. When you renew your precept, when you develop mindfulness to be ever mindful of your mental intention so that you will not violate this precept, means you have sila. So within Noble Eightfold Path, this sila starts with right view. Right view regards to the law of karma, like we went through last time. From this right view, the Buddha explained the law of karma. That's why in the 5 daily contemplation, the Buddha reminded the monk, every day you must contemplate. The first 4 is related mainly to the First Noble Truth Reality. Whereas the last part involved the law of karma, which is the first right view with regards to life and existence. The Buddha said, irrespective of who you are, all beings, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma. If the law of karma is such that your life depends so much upon karma, almost 99.999% is completely dependent on karma, because you are born of it. You inherit all of it. And you are what you are because of it. And every moment, every instant, your life is conditioned and supported by this karma that you have developed, which you call it your karmic nature. So if you don't take care of karma, your life will fall. You will have suffering, affliction, problems. That's why you determine to take care of karma. And how do we take care of karma? We have to follow the advice of the Buddha. We have to determine to avoid all evil, do good, purify the mind. And basically, that is the advice of all Buddhas, not only Sakyamuni Buddhas. All Sammasambuddha, when they come, they will explain the same thing to you. So this one we have covered, the importance of precept from that right view. Because the Buddha also said, the law of karma is such, you reap what you sow. Do good begets good, do evil begets evil. So Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, the first 2 verses in the Dhammapada series of 423 verses, the first 2 already very clearly explain to you what this law of karma is all about. The Buddha said, our mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arises, everything arises. So if you don't take care of mind, if you choose to be heedless, then you will act, speak, and think with a heedless mind that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, which are the 3 evil roots, roots of all evil, or the 3 poisons. Then suffering will follow you like the wheel that follows the hood of the cart. So this is very clear. If you are heedless, you will suffer. Then Dhammapada verse 2, the complementary verse, again the Buddha explained, because mind is so important. Our mind is a forerunner of all things, mind is chief. So if we see the importance of this through right view, the law of karma, then we will be heedful. Then we will act, speak, and think with a heedful mind, with a wholesome mind that is free of all the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. And then happiness will follow you, like your shadow that never leaves you. So to understand life is very easy. If you want to be happy, you avoid Dhammapada verse 1. Train your mind to be heedful. Then you will have happiness in life. If you choose to remain heedless, do not care about life, do whatever you like, then through your own heedlessness, you create your own suffering following Dhammapada verse 1. Then like the Buddha said, the heedless eye is dead. You got no chance. There is no spiritual life because you are accepted. Although you existed through life, but you never have a chance to live the life of a spiritual being. So spirituality is not there. Chance of enlightenment is not there. So you will have a lot of suffering. So when you understand this, you will determine to keep your precepts. Otherwise, you cannot avoid all evil. Because those who break and violate their precepts, they commit evil. The evil roots are there. We have already gone through all this. So understanding this, the Buddha says sila is very important. Then when you chant your five precepts, when you renew, the text will tell you, the monk will also repeat it to you. You always hear this, is it? Silena sukanti yanti. What does it mean? Precept is the source of what? Sukanti yanti is what? You every day take precept, renew your precept. Precept is the source of what? Happiness and joy. When you keep your precept, you have a lot of happiness, a lot of joy, because you don't violate the nature's law of karma. Then you don't create negativity of karma. Then you develop this meritorious action, because keeping precept is a very meritorious action. When you keep your precept, you don't harm yourself, you don't harm others. That's how it become very meritorious. Then this is a parami. Then you cultivate generosity, this become another very powerful parami. That's why the Buddha's teaching include dana, sila, and bhavana. He said, the full cultivation for lay people, you must have dana. Understand? Then sila, samadhi, and panya is for the monks, for cultivator. Then bhavana is actually samadhi and panya. That's why this is called the meditative training, bhavana. So when you cultivate samadhi leading to the awakening, the arising of wisdom, this is called bhavana, meditative training. That's why sila bhavana is actually sila, samadhi, and panya. So from right view, you will arise the right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, and the four right effort to take care of sila. Then samadhi is mindfulness. Together with samadhi, collectedness of mind, unwavering mind. So when you meditate and cultivate samadhi, you are seeing as they are. Your mind is unwavering, collected, calm, peaceful, because you are just aware without thought. So awareness, D, is awareness before the knowing. So that's why you cultivate sati, stabilize it, then you use it to cultivate satipatthana. Satipatthana is a four foundation of mindfulness. That's why without mindfulness, you cannot cultivate four foundation of mindfulness. And the four foundation of mindfulness is within Noble Eightfold Path Factor of samasati. So in order to develop samasati, you need sati. Understand? That's why sati and samasati, they are together, very important. Then the fourth foundation of mindfulness is there. But within the four foundations of mindfulness, there is another emphasis. Sati alone, not enough, is it? You have to combine with clear comprehension. Sati sampajala. That one is a real meditation. Mindfulness and clear comprehension means clearly comprehending what is going on. Because sati alone is just aware, without thought. That is the meditative mind state. Then you can understand many things. But to understand is sampajana. That's why you have to awaken to the characteristics of nature. And the main sampajana is to insight into impermanence, suffering state and non-self, or empty nature or existence. So through the silent mind, through that sati, when you have clear comprehension, there is recollection, there is insight, there is understanding, there is awakening. So this is how the whole of the cultivation will fall into place. Can follow so far? Yeah? You cannot follow, you better put up your hand and ask me, and then I will slow down to explain, to make it clearer. So far, can follow that? That's why I need to know whether you can follow. If you cannot follow, it's very difficult to go on. So I rejoice because quite a number of people can follow. So this has been purposely repeated. And because it's recorded, you have to listen to it again and again. Then write it down. Otherwise, you cannot remember. You write it down and reflect, contemplate using the second turning to develop the clear understanding of the essential Dhamma as taught by the Buddha. And this is only phase one Dhamma, Pariyati. Understand? Before you understand, you cannot put it into practice. But the moment you understand, you become serious. You see the importance of it. You understand what this thing is. Then you will go all out to develop the spiritual faculty of Saddha Virya to cultivate this teaching. Then you will start to understand why you have to keep your precept, like what we explained the last talk. And today, just now, I repeated, refresh you. So the importance of precept, including Dana Parami. Well, Dana Parami can give rise to a lot of wholesomeness. And there are three categories of Dana Parami. And these are your merits. Then you can invoke the power of merits. That's why it can bring forth the causes and conditions for you to progress along the path of Dhamma. And once you have Dana and Sila, then only you can go into meditation. That's why meditation is today's topic, the importance of Sati and Satipatthana Sutta in cultivation. So I already explained why Sati is so important. For sati is life, even Ajahn Chah say, and the Buddha say, all of things in this world, if it's wholesomeness, goodness, wisdom, it has to arise from sati or apamada. When you have mindfulness leading to heedfulness, you become beautiful. Like the Buddha say, the heedful never die. And heedfulness is the path to the deathless. But the moment you don't have sati, you cannot be heedful. Then the Buddha said, the heedless are as if dead. And heedlessness is the path to the dead. So get that in mind. Write it down. Read it. Understand it. Repeat it. And ask yourself, my life, I hold the key to my own life destiny. Then like Dhammapada verse 22, understanding the big difference between heedfulness and heedlessness, what does the wise one do? Huh? The wise were intent on what? Dhammapada verse 22. What is it? The wise were intent on what? Heedfulness, isn't it? It's obvious, isn't it? Because they don't want to be heedless. The heedless are as if dead. Do you want to be heedless? Can you afford to be heedless? If you choose to be heedless, that is your choice. You go ahead, but don't complain when suffering arises. When the Buddha said the heedless are as if dead, then there is no spiritual life. Then you will be constantly afflicted with dukkha. Because the person who don't have heedfulness or mindfulness cannot keep precept, cannot cultivate sila. Why? If you are not even mindful of your own mental intention, how can you keep your precept? If you don't even understand what constitutes evil, how can you keep your precept? That's why the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion has to be understood. Then what constitutes wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, wrong livelihood? You have to understand. And you don't have mindfulness, you cannot contemplate, you cannot reflect, you cannot put the teaching into cultivation. That's why without sati, there is no cultivation at all. Because without sati, you cannot investigate the Dhamma, which is the second enlightenment factor. Then without sati, you cannot cultivate satipatthana, the fourth foundation of mindfulness. Then without sati, you cannot be hateful. Then without sati, you cannot see your mental intention behind all of your action, speech, and thought process. So how are you going to cultivate right thought, right speech, right action? How are you going to keep your precept to abandon all the wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action? And arise the cultivation of the four right effort. You can't even be mindful of your evil roots, which condition your wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, and wrong livelihood. Then how can you abandon it? Yeah, you can't even see it. You don't even understand what they are. So the whole of cultivation demands a lot of understanding. That's why you have to listen to all this recording, even though you think it's repeated. No, because it hasn't gone in for most of you. Even those who have heard it before thought you understood, but you are not seriously committed to it, you still don't understand. You know, but you never do understand. You know the seriousness of karma, like I told you all before, 1971, the moment I read about this Four Noble Truths, there is no turning back. The moment I understand this teaching, I see the importance and go, this nature go all out to cultivate. That's how it can develop the understanding and the transformation. Otherwise, it can't. No way. That's why I say cultivation is a full-time job. Not to say you have to retire to do it. No. Full-time means throughout the day. Initially, your waking moments. Because daily mindfulness can be cultivated anytime, any place, anywhere in the midst of life. You don't have to wait till you retire. You don't have to be in a quiet place. You don't have to go to a retreat center to do it. There are reasons why people do that. Because those places initially is more conducive to train the mind. But after you have trained the mind, after you have developed mindfulness, heedfulness, the real test is in the daily life. That's why the daily mindfulness, which is sati sampajana, mindfulness and clear comprehension of all action, all movement in the present moment. That is the real cultivation. You cannot understand that and you cannot move to that level. Very difficult for you to progress. So now you understand, yeah, the importance of sati. Then when you have sati, it will actually start the ball rolling. So all of meditation focus on sati. From there you stabilize it. Then you use it to cultivate the daily mindfulness. Then the initial wisdom, the insight, will allow you to understand the three universal characteristics of impermanence, suffering, state, and non-self. Then with this understanding, you can move on That's why in the Satipatthana Sutta it's always stated, after overcoming covetousness and grief, then only you start your Vedana Nupassana cultivation. Chitta Nupassana cultivation. Leading to Dhamma Nupassana cultivation. Why is it so? What is the meaning of after overcoming covetousness and grief? These are the duality linked to the evil roots of greed and hatred. The first two of the three evil roots of greed and hatred, and the first two of the five mental hindrances. That's why all these are linked, related. So covetousness is your possessiveness, your craving, your desire, whatever that you cling on to and hold on to. Then grief is your suffering, your misery, your sorrow, your lamentation. So this duality, if you cannot overcome, means you don't have the initial wisdom to go into the deeper cultivation of the four foundations of mindfulness. That's why it's not what you think. Today, what happened to the aircon? You all feel hot or not? I feel very hot here. I don't know what is happening. Normally very cold. You don't mind. Or at least on this fan to give me some ventilation. I think this one is not on, I think. you put the plug up, okay. Then check the aircon and see. Good. Okay. You're at the back, okay. Means your aircon is on. Here, not on. Good, thank you. This ventilation is better. Otherwise, very stuffy. Very stuffy. Okay, thank you. It's okay. Okay, that one on it better. So thank you so much. Because when the air is stuffy, it will affect the physical body, understand? Then when it affects the physical body, my condition is different. Yeah, I got no memory. Not to say I don't got no memory, the brain is there. But I don't speak according to memory. So when the body has this type of stuffiness or stale air or whatever, then it is not efficient to speak. Then it will actually affect the sharing. So at least now, much better. Now I continue. Where did I stop? Where did I stop? Can somebody recall and let me? Very good. Thank you. After overcoming covetousness and grief, you go and read the Satipatthana Sutta, the Four Foundations. It's all there. So after explaining to you all the importance of Sati and the Satipatthana Sutta, I will now zero in on the actual cultivation so that you all know what to do. So just now I explained a bit. You have to listen, write it down. Then when you write it down, you go through it, reflect, contemplate, and assimilate this understanding in so that it becomes a part of your understanding. Cultivation, like I always emphasize, is to be done with understanding. You don't understand, you cannot cultivate. So understanding means what? You need to have sati, the spiritual faculty of sati. Then like what I have taught you all before, most of you who attended my class, you will know what is meditation. As taught by the Buddha, that is the most important. So to the Buddha, before he passed away, he again reminded the monk, apamadena sampadeta. What is the meaning of that? Strive on with heedfulness. That's why you must understand what is heedfulness. If that is the advice before the parinibbana, and you somehow don't want to understand that, then how to cultivate? So heedfulness is very important. To be heedful is to be ever mindful, which is Dhammapada verse 23. Then, when you are ever mindful, means you are constantly mindful to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. That's why Dhammapada verse 23 confirmed the importance of sati and heedfulness. He said, the constantly meditative and ever mindful, if you keep on to this practice, the steadfast one, they will realize the supreme bond-free Nibbana. Means you must be constantly meditative and ever mindful. Means ever mindful to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is the Noble Eightfold Path. And this is what Appamada is all about. Heedfulness is all about. So if this is the case, you ask yourself, how do I develop heedfulness? First, I must train my mind to be mindful, okay? Can follow? Can follow that? You better respond, otherwise I cannot continue. Yeah, can follow? Train your mind to be mindful. Second stage is what? Stabilize it so that it becomes ever mindful. I better write down. Otherwise, you cannot follow. So what is heedfulness? Yeah? Heedfulness got two parts. Oh, this ink also don't have. Huh? What are the two parts? Ever mindful and second part is what? Constantly meditative. And this is constantly meditative. Means constantly cultivating Noble Eightfold Path. Cultivating the Noble Eightfold Path. So that's why you have to train your mind to have sati. Then stabilize it. So that it become ever mindful. So now you understand why all the meditation, they teach you how to train your mind. In Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha said, the first category of practice, Kayanupassana, what is the first training? Yeah? Within Kayanupassana, there are six types of meditation training. The first one is what? Huh? Wow, this one also you cannot remember then how to put into practice. Anapanasati. The Buddha said you start with anapanasati, mindfulness of the in and out breath. And that is to train your mind to be mindful, understand or not? After you have trained, what happened? You have to stabilize it, understand or not? How do you stabilize it? Thank you. How do you stabilize it? That's why they give you object of meditation, understand or not? The method and the technique and the object of meditation is a skillful means to anchor your mind so that it's not heedlessly wandering off. It's for you to anchor your mind to be one with the object of meditation. Like anapanasati, your breath, the in and out breath. When your mind and breathing is in harmony, synchronized. That's why the Buddha say breathing in and when the mind and the breath move as one. Without thought, there is a deed. Otherwise, it's heedless. It wanders off. That's why they ask you to note rising, falling, which is also another method and technique.
But you don't understand what that noting is. You go and use thought to note. You go and verbalize, rising, 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 falling, falling, falling. Then walking also say lifting, lifting, intending to walk. You are verbalizing, conceptualizing. Wherever there is thought, there is no sati. Understand? You can only do one thing at a time as a human being. Either you are aware within the moment so that you are aware of what is going on, or you are lost in thought, thinking. The moment you label, verbalize, and create all this word, you are lost in thought. So, but this is verbalizing, chattering. So, all this you don't understand, you cannot cultivate, understand? So, sati is just silent. Be with the moment without thought. The moment you are silent without thought, you are already aware. Don't try to be aware. Who is trying to be aware? The thought is ever active, trying to be aware, trying to note this, note that. That one is a skillful mean to train the mind. That one is not meditation. That one is just a series of instruction to train the mind to do things. Got nothing to do with the noble eightfold path. And if you don't understand what is sati, you cannot do. Now you follow. And why do you need method and technique? Why can't your mind enter the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness straight away? What is the reason? Why are you not peaceful, not aware? Why are you heedless? I have taught you in the meditation, isn't it? Every lesson also I repeat. What is the reason? Why are you heedless? Why are you not mindful, aware, and peaceful? Due to what? The five mental hindrance, because they hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace and inner awareness to develop the meditative state. That's why you cannot become peaceful. That's why they come up with method, technique, and meditation object to try to anchor the mind, to develop the skillful means. At least I teach you mind sweeping method, so that you don't think, you just feel relaxed, to decondition your heedless thinking. Then only there is peace. When you don't think, automatically you already aware, your mind silent, peaceful. That's why after that, stabilize it through either anapanasati or any skillful means. But if you already understood that it is because of the hindrance, because throughout the day, like I explained, when you live your daily life, you are not mindful, you are not heedful. You are heedless, you think a lot, you react to sense experience. Every moment of consciousness, when you see something, hear something, smell, taste, tactile, feel, or think, what do? You stir your mind, you react. That's why you have a lot of like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. And this stirring of the mind is creating mental hindrance. But this essential desire and ill will. First two of the mental hindrance. If throughout the day you do that, it becomes so habitual, then how can you have the meditative mind? How can you be peaceful? That's why you think a lot. You cannot meditate. You come and meditate the moment you try to be peaceful or silent, all these thoughts come. Because this is your habitual tendency. The mental hindrance are there. Then not only that, sometimes you feel sleepy, sloth and torpor. Now I won't fall into sloth and torpor because this ventilation is making my body fresh. So now I can speak different. But just now I felt it. I just now, yes, this air is stuffy. Then this particular form of mind cannot be efficient when the air is stale, understand not? Lack of ventilation, lack of oxygen. Because we are still, the form of mind is still an organism. So all this, you will develop the understanding. So now coming back to the mental hindrance, you know that it is this mental hindrance that causes the inability of you to meditate, to have the meditative mind. What must you do? What must you do? Huh? Don't make the mistake like everybody do, no? You don't go and suppress the hindrance, control and fight the hindrance, understand not? The Buddha say, don't do that. That's why under Dhammanupassana, the first category of cultivation is mindfulness of the five mental hindrances. Just be aware of it. It will come to pass. Then when it comes to pass, you will come to understand how the arisen hindrance ceases to be. Then when you are observant, mindful, heedful, you will come to know how the unarisen hindrance come to be. Then through this, you develop wisdom. This is the fourth way. Means, investigate into the cause of the arising of the mental hindrance or the wrong thought. Then retrospectively reverse it. Then you will come to realize through the mindfulness training, the fourth foundation, that it is through one of your sense doors. Before you get angry or unhappy or attached to that sense experience, there was no anger, no craving. But how come it arise? It because it is condition arising. When you see beautiful form, you get attracted. It lure you. That's why that essential desire. Then you are preoccupied with that sense experience. Means lost in thought. So when you do that, how can you be mindful? How can you be with the moment? True or not? True or not? This is real meditation. And throughout the day, your mind hold on to so many things. Kepoa, very kepoa. And you like to command and complain. Rain also complain, no rain also complain. How? Then you cannot see your mind, you are not mindful. You don't understand what is going on. And this heedlessness has been there throughout the day. That's why when it becomes habitual tendency, you cannot meditate. Then the Buddha said, don't fight them, don't control them, don't suppress them. Just allow them to be. With the silent mind, awareness, mindfulness, see them clearly. Investigate into their origination factor, how they arise. So when I know that it's through one of my senses, either I see something that I don't like or like, or I hear something that I don't like or like, or I recall to memory, these three mind door, very powerful. So when you can trace the origination factor, then you reflect and contemplate. Why did I react and stir my mind? So what is the cause of the arising of this unarisen mental hindrance? It's because of my wrong view. I cannot see things as they are. I cannot accept things as they are. I cannot accept them for what they are. I perceive them with negativity, with delusion, self-delusion, attachment, clinging, grasping. That's why I keep on doing this thing. And it has become habitual without you realizing it. That's why the heedless are as if dead. You become so heedless, constantly reacting and lost in thought. Complaining, reacting, stirring your mind. And this is the characteristics of heedlessness. Then when you break your precept, violate your precept, don't keep your sila. You don't have dana parami. You every time fall into karmic friction, the karmic obstruction will come. The karmic friction of your evil deeds and all those things will come. Then this hindrance will come. Problem will come. Because when you violate your precept, when you kill, you harm, you deceive and all those things, people will come after you. Society's law will come after you. Then you have fear, worry, anxiety. You scared people come to know. Then you scared people take action against you. That's why there is no peacefulness. There is no happiness, no joy. The moment you violate your precept, you are gone. That's why the precept, the Buddha said, si lena sukang tinyanti, just now we didn't finish that part. Precept is the source of spiritual happiness, spiritual joy. When you keep your precept, you have a lot of joy, a lot of happiness, because you know you are following the advice of the Buddha. You are not creating any more karmic negativity. You are being very virtuous, wholesome, following the Noble Eightfold Path as taught by the Buddha. With right view, you are determined to avoid all evil by keeping the precepts. This is a source of true spiritual happiness, joy in you. And you feel that you have done your part. You have been very meritorious and very noble in the sense that you understand the danger of violating these precepts. Then Silena, after Silena Sugandhiyanti, the second part is what? Silena Bhoga Sampadan. What is that? Precept is a source of? You better go back and read out the Prabhu that day Nancy's house on the house dhana. You better read out with all that. I repeat the many. If you keep on listening and don't want to be serious to understand this and write down so that it become your understanding, then you cultivate your understanding, you can never progress, I tell you. Yeah. Because you are not serious. Yeah. You see, Sukantiyanti and Bhoga Sampadan means precept is not only the source of spiritual joy, happiness, it's also the source of spiritual wealth. Because when you keep your precept, you have dana parami, you have meritorious action, you can invoke power of merits, then you can receive the causes and conditions to receive spiritual teaching, spiritual wealth. Then normally when you keep your precept, you renew your precept in front of the Buddha or those great beings, or you go to temple, or you partake in Dhamma activity like here, then our puja, you will do that. Then you listen to Dhamma, you straighten your view, you receive spiritual wealth. Then you share merit, you transfer merit. Then you straighten your view. All these are meritorious action. Then you keep your precept. You make offering, generosity, dana, sila, then you meditate, bhavana. All these are meritorious action. So with all this, you receive spiritual wealth, merits, blessing. Then the last part is the best. Silena nibuntinyanti. What is the meaning? Precept is a source of what? Yeah? Spiritual peacefulness of mind. That's why you keep your precept, you are very peaceful, where nobody disturbs you. You don't have to worry about people coming after you, understand? Haunting you, taking revenge and all that. You don't violate your precept. Your life becomes very peaceful, full of joy. Then you develop spiritual understanding. That's why without sila, it's very difficult to go into meditation. So the Buddha said you don't fight the mental hindrance. So what must you do? You cultivate the opposite five, spiritual faculty. And spiritual faculty is so easy. What are the advice of the Buddha to cultivate spiritual faculty? That's why he come up with all the nosati. Through your puja, you have to chant them, reflect on them. Dhamma no sati, Buddha no sati, Sangha no sati, Marana no sati. All these are contemplative wisdom. Recall to mind the nine great virtues of the Buddha so that you know how special the Buddha is, how unique a being he is. He is not only enlightened, he is fully enlightened. To have such a great teacher to guide you, to teach you, you should have a lot of gratitude towards him, respect for him. That's why you will pay respect. You will have faith in him. Then when you understand that his teaching can make such big difference to your life, can bring about enlightenment in the here and now, can free you from all mental suffering, what are you waiting? If I were you, my life, I will decide to go all out to cultivate this. And it's given free. You don't have to even waste any money. You only have to use your time efficiently, fruitfully, so that you don't become heedless. Then when you determine to be heedful and go all out to understand his teaching and put it into cultivation, you will progress. Your life will improve. You will transform. Character-wise, personality-wise, you will become very different, very beautiful. Then when you cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, you develop the embodiment of this Noble Eightfold Path, characteristics and understanding. Then you hold all this Noble Eightfold Path quality. It means you are very noble in all aspects of life. You have right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, and right living. Then you are very mindful, ever mindful, until it becomes samadhi. So when you reflect this way, your spiritual faculty will come, sadhā will come. Then it will drive you to cultivate because you see the importance of this teaching. Then when you determine to cultivate, sati will arise, will come. Means you pay respect, mindful. You determine to be aware. Like the Buddha said, train your mind in anapanasati. After that, through your bowing, through your daily mindfulness. He said, after you have sati developed, you have to stabilize it with anapanasati or any skillful mind. So after you have stabilized it, you meditate until your mind cannot run, means on its own, it's already in sati, then that mind has become stable. That's why it has sparsity, tranquility, stillness of mind. No thought, it's just aware. Then when you stabilize that, it becomes samadhi. Then you can see things as they are, and you will understand many things, you will awaken. That is what meditation is all about. So when sati arises, it's very easy to meditate. You don't have to fight all these things. So when you are aware, there is no thought. No thought means what? No mental hindrance, no fear, no worry, no anxiety, no doubt, nothing, because the faith is there. So when you have faith, you don't have doubt. Your mind is very calm, very composed. Then when there is virya, you are not sleepy. When there is sati, there is no sensual desire and ill will and restlessness of mind. Because the mind is aware without thought. Without thought, how to react, how to stir, how to project, cannot. That's why when that one stabilized and were mindful, it becomes samadhi. Then your spiritual faculty fall into place. Then with sati and samadhi, like I said, you can see things as they are. Because your mind is unwavering. It does not stir, it's collected and unwavering. So in the midst of life, when you see something, hear something, smell, taste, technically feel or think, the mind is collected and unwavering. That's why it does not stir, it does not react. And through that samadhi, you see things as they are, not what your thought tell you, not what your belief system tell you, not what your conditioning and wrong view tell you. Means you see things as they are, without word, without concept. And that is the direction. That's why with that silent mind in sati, you can awaken. Then sati sampajana means clearly comprehending what you see through the direction. Then you will awaken, you will understand. Then you realize everything is just condition arising, dependent oriented, like what the Buddha said. Then you reflect on the teaching, avijja paccaya sankhara. Then you realize, yeah, this is what happened. Then sankhara paccaya viññāṇaṁ. Then you understand what these are. Then viññāṇaṁ paccaya namarūpaṁ. All you understand. No need to refer to book. No need to worry about what the monk say or what the book say. Through your own direct seeing, direct experiencing, you will know. Then you will come to understand why the Buddha said this teaching, the Dhamma is pachetang, can be realized by the wise, each for themselves. No need to check. Nobody can teach you. That's why the Buddha said, I can only show you the way. You have to walk the path yourself. You have to awaken yourself. You have to realize yourself. He cannot make you enlightened. Understand? He can teach you and show you the way, but you have to do it. You have to awaken to it. It's just like food. I cannot eat for you. Understand? You have to eat yourself. To feel. To overcome your hunger.
your bodily need and all those things. So these are the teaching. So when you cultivate the opposite five spiritual faculty, your mental hindrance are all gone, wiped off. Then you realize I don't have to do anything. The moment I have sadha, virya, and sati, my mind is automatically in a meditative state, but there is no mental hindrance to hinder me. And the biggest mistake for most meditator and cultivator is they don't understand the Satipatthana Sutta. I have heard a lot of people teaching and even in the recording, everything. The famous question is what? How to deal with pain? They give you all sorts of answers and understanding. But I tell you, the real one is not what they think. The moment you label it pain, what is it? Yeah? When you meditate, yeah? Then you experience that painful feeling, unpleasant feeling, what is it? You label it in there. And the most gullible thing is they teach you how to note. Note what? Pain, pain, pain. Hopefully it will go away. Then they tell you, if you are mindful enough, it will go away. First thing first, what are you doing? You are verbalizing, conceptualizing. You don't have sati. And the moment you label it as pain, what is it? The five mental hindrance, the first two, what is it? You dislike that feeling, isn't it? You want to push it away, isn't it? So that is a mental hindrance, understand not? The mind don't like aversion, dislike, unpleasant feeling. That's why the Buddha said, when feeling has become unpleasant feeling, you must be aware. Means what? You must be aware that you have created mental hindrance. And what is mental hindrance? Mental states that hinders your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace and inner calmness. That's why you cannot meditate. How to meditate when you create your own hindrance? What must you do? You have to understand what is going on. That's why meditation is to be done with understanding. You have to investigate how come pain arises. So after long sitting, then you say pain should arise. But how come some can sit without having to worry about pain? Of course, there are 2-3 possibilities. Because they go into concentration. Then they numb their feeling. Then they go into good jhanic state. Absorption state, one-pointedness. Then the energy build up. Then they have what they call piti and sukha. Then this feeling is so intense that it overcomes the pain. That's why they don't feel pain. They hold on to all this. But that one is the conditioned state. That is not the way out. Sooner or later, when you are not in concentration, the pain will come back. And you cannot free. Because as long as you labor, it becomes a hindrance. So what you do? That's how you investigate, the Buddha said. How come pain arises? Then you come to realize, because you are not relaxed, understand not? The qi cannot flow, understand not? You create blockage of flow of qi. Then if you relax into it, silence your mind, don't labor, be at peace with it, because you tell yourself. The untrained mind will have hindrance. The thought will arise. So what? Let it be. I don't react, I don't fight, I don't stir. I just allow it to arise. And it will pass away. And if it passes away, it is not a problem. True or not? Then if I don't labor, I got no mental hindrance. The acceptance of that feeling. Feeling will remain as pure feeling. You're like the Buddha said, anger, pain is a conditioned arising state. Where through your wrong view, you perceive it with negativity, you create mental hindrance. That's why you're not peaceful. Next time you do it this way, you relax into it, at peace with it, accept it for what it is. When my body is not relaxed, the qi got trapped, this type of phenomena will arise. And this is a reality.
Why do I want to label it as pain? Why do I want to push it away? Why am I creating negativity and aversion towards that feeling? Why can't I be at peace with it? Make friends. Because that is your teacher, understand? You can learn from it. Then when you relax into it, silent, because you are just maintaining that silence, which is awareness, sati, then you will be very surprised. All of a sudden, that sensation is gone. Because when you don't have mental hindrance, when you don't label it, you don't perceive it with negativity, you become at peace with it. Then that peace will transform into pity. Pity will arise. Pity is a spiritual joy, spiritual calmness. Then when your sadha virya is there, sati will take over, then pity will arise. And pity is an enlightenment factor. That's why after you investigate into the Dhamma, you understand, you know how to meditate. That's why the meditation falls upon is relax, then maintain the awareness. Don't create mental hindrance. Then this so-called unpleasant feeling will not arise. Because when sati take over, you will experience pity, then your body relaxes by itself. Then you feel the peacefulness with it. And pity is an enlightenment factor. Understand? That's why it can bring about enlightenment. Then when there is this enlightenment factor of sati leading to investigation of Dhamma, Dhamma Vichaya, then the virya that drives you, then you experience pity. Then when you continue to relax and silent, what happened to pity? The next enlightenment factor, which is pasati, will arise. That is the silent mind. That is the meditative mind. That is the tranquility or stillness of mind. The mind will become so quiet, so peaceful, so still, without thought. That is the meditative mind. That is how you meditate. You go and label and do all the funny things and create your own hindrance without knowing and still believe that you are doing vipassana. That is the worst. Understand? Please don't get me wrong. It's not my intention to make any comment. They are just the way they are. They understand it that way. They meditate that way. They teach you that way. There is no such thing as right and wrong. Because people are just the way they are. Right according to them. So we do not want to make any comment. I just want to share with you my understanding. You go and investigate. You go and find out yourself. Whether what I explain to you is logical or not. Then you got nothing to lose. The next time you meditate, you try it. Then you see whether the pain go or not. And I can tell you, this nature has done it before. Until today, I got no problem at all with all these things. Because it flashes through 20 over years ago, then this nature understood what this thing is. That's why I can explain it to you, how it can be developed through an understanding. And this is how you meditate. That's why silent, relax, just aware. Don't go and stir your mind and note this, note that. If you are actively using the thought to meditate, then who is the meditator? Huh? Who is the meditator? The thought, isn't it? And what is thought? The egoic mind. With the self-delusion. How can that one meditate? That one, before is enlightened, it has wrong view. That's why it has the duality, yin-yang. The energy is not the pure energy. That's why those who go into energy field, they have yin-yang problem. Then they temper with their whatever body. Where they focus, they concentrate, they use the thought, which is still without the wisdom, with the duality. That's why with the yin-yang, positive and negative energy, then they try to note. They try to store the energy. That's why this one will create yin-yang problem. There is no understanding. Then there is no equanimity. The energy is yin-yang because there is no wisdom, no understanding. There is no equanimity. Then, because they got no way of overcoming it, they go into concentration. They go into samatha. They focus, they concentrate, they go into absorption, they develop jhana. So that all these conditions arising, mind state become so calm, so peaceful, so strong in their mental state. They use it to suppress the hindrance. Then like no thought. Like they are in the enlightenment state. Yes. It's like you are enlightened. The word is like. Then like the Buddha said, the defilement, the latent tendency, the anusaya, the mental hindrance, they are still suppressed. Means no condition to arise. But when there is condition to arise, because you have not rooted it out. The analogy by the Buddha is a cup of clear water, a glass of clear water. Yeah? If you don't stir it, what happens? The sediment will settle down, then the water will be clear. Right? Then like clear water. The mind has clarity. We're all suppressed, cannot come out. But the moment you stir, what happens? When there is condition for it to arise, that latent tendency, that dust below, because it's not rooted out, they will float out. That's why you can still react. That's why when you go back to daily life, yeah, for most meditators, you experience it before. You know, at the retreat, you are so calm, so peaceful. You think you have achieved, you have realized, you're so beautiful. The moment you come out, maximum 3 weeks, you go back to square one. Then you run back to retreat again. You go and meditate again. You force your mind to become peaceful again. Then you think by doing that, you can become enlightened. Then you end up like Sun Tzu, remember? Polish until it shines so that no dust can alight. Mean every day mindful, 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 aware. No need to live life. Then the mind cannot settle down, cannot be peaceful. You have to do things to make the mind peaceful. That is not wisdom. The real one that frees you is wisdom. No need to do anything. Anywhere, anytime, any place, under any circumstances, you are still peaceful. In the midst of sound, there can be silence. In the midst of vibration, there can be stillness. You can be in society, yet you are peaceful. Still, silent within. Aware. What's the problem? There is no problem. So, cultivation is to be developed with understanding. Yeah? I hope I have explained clear and hard to you all tonight. Yeah? So, try to listen to this sharing again. Then write down the notes. Then read the transcript. Then develop your own contemplative wisdom and understanding. Then when you understand clearly, when you can write it down clearly, then you know what to do. Then you start the cultivation. When you cultivate the understanding, you progress very fast, I tell you. You don't have to worry about what people say. Then you don't have to worry like some of the Kayamita earlier said, why I so chow and relative after attending your class for so long, after listening, reading all the transcript, there is no progress. Then all of a sudden, that fellow who told me, I told him, your time will come. You have to be patient. Because this thing, you cannot have craving and desire. And the one thing to be enlightenment, to be enlightened and progress, is a craving, is a sensual desire, is a thought. Understand? That's why you must have faith. Just do, don't try to know. That's why I always advise when you meditate, just meditate with understanding. Don't try to know. Then when the condition falls into place, it will happen. You will transform. Then after he transformed, then only he realized what I told him was correct. Then after that, you know what he said. Now he go and tell all the Kayamita who go and seek advice from him. He said, you forget about everything. You just listen attentively and follow what Brother Teo tell you to do. Then you will transform. Then he said, everything you don't know, go back to the Heart Sutta. That note. Everything is inside that. That's how that few Kayanamita progress. You have received all this teaching. It's enough for you, I tell you. You only need to be serious. Go into it. Put in the hard work. That's why strive on with diligence. With heedfulness. Strive on with heedfulness, diligently. Then, it will unfold. The moment you have faith, sadha, virya, and you are sincere, the path will be there. The Dhamma will unfold. Okay? So, I thank you all for your patience in listening. Sadhu. Okay, today we got more time for Q&A. Not too bad. 10 minutes before 10. Okay, you got any question you can ask while I have a drink. So now with the ventilation, I felt fresh and good. Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing. This question is with regard to karma. Right, we are being told to be mindful, to be heedful of our karma.
Yes.
It is easy for us, since we are practicing, to be right here and now, to take care of our karma.
Yes.
But we cannot do anything about our past karma.
Yes.
We cannot prevent our past karma from surfacing.
Correct.
But how do we handle it?
Okay, very good. Thank you. Very good question, Danny. So you see, a lot of cultivator has this problem. There is one part that you didn't ask. I will also answer you. You see, a lot of people don't understand. When it comes to karma, the Buddha said we are all born of it, air to it, conditioned and supported by it, and we are what we are because of it. So when we understand the significance of karma, means karma plays such a great role in our life, all of our life. The moment we are born, it is because of karma. That's why you are born of your karma. Then you inherit everything that you have developed through your karmic nature, good or bad, it comes. Then every moment, every instant, this law of karma through your karmic nature condition and support your life. And the Buddha said, you are what you are because of your karma. Means this life. How you are born into this world and the DNA that you have and what you experience, these are all the result of your karma. You are what you are because of your karma, every moment, every instant. So if this is the case, what must I do? That's why I say, take care of karma. You understand the meaning of that? Take care of karma means never to add anymore. Like you say, the past is already gone. You cannot change. Whatever action, speech, and thought process may be good or evil, is already recorded. Finished. The past is already gone. No more reality. So take care of karma means from this moment onward, when I have this understanding, I determine to be heedful, to be mindful, to cultivate. And when you cultivate, you cannot tell yourself, you have to be like you say, the other word they use is vigilant. Heedfulness, there's another word, vigilant, ever mindful. Means you try not to break your precept. You try to avoid evil. You try to do good. Now this part you never ask. Who is trying? The thought. And this is not the way to cultivate. Because the Buddha said, you have to avoid all evil. And what constitutes evil? In the essential Dhamma, he has taught you the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. That's why the moment you can do this, avoid all evil, you are naturally good. Correct or not? You can understand. The absence of evil is good. Correct or not? So don't try to do good. Why? Your good is a conditioned good. You never ask, no. Good according to who? Good according to you, because you still not enlightened. You may still have selfishness, craving, delusion. So whatever that is good according to you is your view, understand? Your opinion of good. That's why truth is your truth, my truth, no meaning. Because these are relative truth. Truth according to you and me. But the nature's law, there is only one truth, the reality. The Buddha said, as long as there is no evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. So you must go into the essential teaching to understand clearly what constitutes the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. The meaning is very wide. So when you understand deeply this one, then you can cultivate. That's why the Buddha said, it's chetana that I call karma. Chetana is a mental intention. When the mental intention got the slightest greed, hatred, or delusion, greed, the meaning is so wide. All of your craving, desire, attachment, clinging, holding on, deceitfulness, trying to develop advantage out of it, is your greed. Trying to own, trying to possess, like possessiveness is part of greed. And the meaning is so deep. All of your desire, your like and your like and your craving, your attachment, your clinging, your holding on to things, whatever you that you keep meaning, you try to own them and possess them. That is your greed. That is the evil roots of loba. Not the one you eat at the Pasamalama loba. Loba. Then, anger, hatred. It includes envy and jealousy, your dislike, your aversion towards certain things, your unhappy mind. So all this, you have to go into it. Then you start to see all of your selfishness is part of greed. Selfishness, one word alone, can be so deep in meaning. When you consider everything through the self, that is selfishness, because you only think of yourself. So because of that, the egoic mind arises, you try to own, you try to possess, that's why you have selfishness. You become greedy. You have craving, you have desire. And so this is a very wide aspect of greed. Then hatred, I have explained. Then delusion is your lack of wisdom, lack of understanding, lack of right view. When you don't understand the nature's law that governs life and existence, when you don't understand truth, that's why it conditions your fear, your doubt, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow, your lamentation. And your thought is also same. What constitutes wrong thought also you don't know. What constitutes wrong speech also you don't know. What constitutes wrong action also you don't know. That's why the precept is a guide. The four wrong speech is a guide. Then wrong thought means what? They only teach you what is right thought. They always limit to the four Brahma Vihara state. Loving kindness, compassion, then sympathetic joy, equanimity. They say these are right thought. But they never teach you wrong thought. The more important thing is to teach people what constitutes wrong thought, understand? Then you can be aware of it. Understand? What constitutes wrong thought? Thought that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion is all wrong thought, understand? Because these are evil roots. That thought, that condition, because when you have evil root, evil condition, your selfishness, your anger, your emotional negativity, your envy, your jealousy, your deceitfulness, your covetousness, your fear, your worry, your anxiety, through delusion. These are all wrong thought. Then whatever thought that condition, your lack of peace, your sorrow, your lamentation, your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your coming negativity, these are all wrong thought. So an easy way to summarize is, whenever you are not happy and peaceful, you have wrong thought. Understand? The evil roots are there. Then only you can cultivate. Why am I not peaceful, not happy? How come I still stir my mind? I still react to sense experience. I still create mental hindrance. So essential desire means I haven't straightened my view. I still carry my wrong view. The evil roots are still there, still active. I cannot progress. This is how you meditate, how you cultivate. Then when you cultivate, precept is the same. The absence of evil is good. So I only have to be mindful of the evil roots. If I am mindful and able to arise the right effort to abandon the wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action that has arisen, then automatically I keep my precept. Then automatically I'm good. Anasana. I don't have to try to be good. If I'm incapable of killing, cheating, deceiving, committing sexual misconduct, lying, if I don't partake intoxicant and maintain clarity of my heedfulness, then I cannot violate the precept, anasana, because I have mindfulness. And that is how you cultivate. Don't allow the conditioning, oh, you must do good. Oh, then you go and tell people, I did so much good, no, how come my life still so lousy? How come I still got so much problem? But you never ask, good according to who? Good according to you. That's why you did this in the past. So this life come, your children did back to you, anasana. Don't obey you, get angry with you, throw tantrum at you, quarrel with you. Why? Well, when you are a kid, you did that to your parent, anasana. You don't know. So this is karmic, come back. Then you say, ayo, I love him so much, I sacrificed so much for him. I gave birth to him, I gave him life, I provide him with everything. I care for him, I sacrifice everything, and he did that to me. Oh, you never check, huh? In the past what you do to your parent. Oh. And because of what you do to your parent, the Buddha said you reap what you sow. They said now got conditions, you think it's your son, your daughter, and now they do back to you. This is what karma is all about. Understand? So when you understand how to overcome karma, like you say, because it's already there. You cannot stop it from arising. True. Correct. So the answer is what? Develop wisdom. Understand? To accept, like what the Buddha tell you, whatever that arise, there are causes and conditions behind. True or not? Means karma. Because everything is karma, the Buddha say. Of course, not 100%. That's why I say 99.99%. We are all born of karma. Head to all conditions for the world. We are what we are because of karma. What else can it be? So if it's karma, means I reflect. The Buddha say, I reap what I sow. Then the five daily contemplation, I really contemplated. I have faith in the Buddha. Well, I'm born of my karma. So why would it happen to me, not to others? Others who have the understanding and known this negativity, this life, they don't have such problem. That's why some go through divorce and all. Say, you last time did it to your spouse. And now there is condition, you become the victim. Then those medium also same, understand? Those who sell drug, push drug also same. Past life, you push drug and cause people all this suffering, you don't know. Then this life, you say, how come I so sweet, I become the victim. I become drug addict. Then you blame society, you blame the drug pusher. Then like the president of Philippines, Duterte, he went tell the police one. I heard from a Filipino friend one. I repeat the word. Is it? He tell the police, I'm the president now. You don't worry. If they violate the law, catch them. Understand? Charge them. But then he said he was a public prosecutor before last time. He was a lawyer. He know the law is very slow. So he said, if they resist, you know what he said, right? Kill them. Then the police asked him back, if they don't resist, very easy, make them resist. Like that also can. That's why now human rights, they complain against him. See, if you go and do all this without understanding, karma will come back, understand? Every killing is coming. So what you should do is like the Buddha said, if I understand this is due to karma, what must I do? I must ask for? Ask for what? Forgiveness and repent. That's why I have been teaching you all to do that. Then determine not to repeat it. Well, this is the law of karma, law of nature that governs life and existence. If I violate, I will have to pay for it. you reap what you sow. Do good because good. Do evil because evil. If I plant the seed of evil, I will reap the fruit of evil. So in order to avoid all this, the first thing is to ask for forgiveness and repent, so that the karmic conditioning, the karmic obstruction can be watered down, can be amicably resolved. Then you sincerely repeat and tell yourself, because now I have right view, I have understood that this is all wrong. These are evil actions that lead to evil karma. I vow never to repeat this again. Then from now onward, I cultivate, following the advice of the Buddha, to avoid all evil, do good and beautiful. Then I develop merits, wholesomeness. I keep my precepts, sila. I develop dana parami, wholesomeness, the 10 meritorious section. Then I invoke power of merits, the third condition, for causes and conditions for me to recover to good state of mind, so that all this karmic friction can be overcome with understanding. Then if I have to endure, I endure, understand, because it's karmic. If my children did all this to me, if I don't react, what happened? Huh? You become at peace, because you know it's law of karma. Because last time I did it to him, to my parents, sorry, not to him. Understand? So now I become parent, I become the victim, they did it to me. So this is karma, fair. Accept it. Don't complain, understand? And tell your children, thank you so much. I think I learned a lot from you. If I continue to react to you and tell you over, I will become the next victim. You know what happens if you react to him and wall up him or chase him out of the house? Next time, your parent will do the same thing to you. Wall up you, chase you out of the house, and tell you off. You want that to be repeated or not? You already understood the law of karma. You already have the Dhamma. You somehow don't know how to be at peace with them. You should tell them, I am really sorry for what I have done, because I don't understand you. Because I created so much unnecessary stress and pressure on you. I thought that was love. Actually, it was my selfishness, because I forced you to do things that you don't like. That is a real parent. Can you do that? Huh? Your role is what? I have told a lot of Kanyamita, and they become so different, so peaceful now. A lot of Kanyamita got this type of problem. Children problem, spouse problem, brother, sister's relationship problem, girlfriend, boyfriend. And when I explain to them, all their problems solved. You have to accept them for what they are, understand or not? Like the Buddha said. And you have to have the right view to accept that these are coming, understand or not? That's the answer, forgiveness, and do all this. That invoke the power of wholesomeness for causes and conditions for you to overcome all this karmic obstruction, karmic negativity, so that in future when you vow not to repeat all this, then you request that may my this sincere request for forgiveness be accepted, so that all this karmic negativity from the past can be amicably resolved. So when you do this, a big portion will be cancelled. And the one that is cancelled are mostly the enlightened being one that you have offended. All the enlightened beings, they know how to forgive one. They already forgiven. You only need to request. Then the nature's law just cut off. Then those who are still heedless and deluded, they want to take revenge, you have to wait for them to come. You got no choice. But when you have the wisdom, you accept, you don't react, you don't create further propagation of karma, understand not? Then you stop it there and then. Then because you understand, you don't have to suffer anymore, understand not? Then you talk to your children nicely, your life. You can have your own decision. Daddy now understand, Daddy will not force you. Otherwise, later, next future life, my parent would do the same to me. I don't want to end up like you. Then your son and your daughter will love you so much, because he know you will not force them to do things that they don't like to do. So anything, they will come back and consult you, counsel you. Because you say, my duty is to advise. Well, I have gone through life. I have my experience. I have my contact. You got any problem, you come back to me. I will advise you what to do, but you don't have to follow what I do. Yeah, your life, you decide. Then you will be at peace. Then likewise, your life, you decide. Why? You may ask me, hey, Buddha say anatta, non-self, why not my life, your life, everybody's life? Yeah, there is your form and mind, that's not all. This one subject to karma. That's why when the Buddha say you are born of your karma, head to your karma condition and supported by your karma, you are what you are because of your karma. It's this form and mind. And this is not you. That's why the Buddha never make mistake. You think he conflict himself or contradict himself. One self tell you non-self, empty, not real. Then the other one, you are born of your karma, heir to your karma condition. But this one refer to your form and mind. And form and mind subject to karma. God is duty. So that's why you have to understand, it's just form and mind, not surreal. But law of karma exists. So that's why even you enlightened, you cannot do what you like, understand? Well, that one subject to karma. So you have to have this understanding. You have to do your duty. That's why my teacher, Ajayantra, always tell me, right duty is right dhamma. If you do your duty well, you are a responsible person as a father, as a children, as an employer, as an employee, or as any citizen in this civilization. You have your duty. Your duty towards others, towards society, towards the environment, and towards yourself. That's how I learn how to respect each and every living being. Learn how to love yourself. Love all of humanity, the environment, the society. And when there is love, there is peace. There is understanding, otherwise you cannot love. And love got no opposite. When you love, you cannot hate. You cannot have dislike. You cannot have the evil. And how to have that understanding to be at peace? Means you have to accept them for what they are. Means what? Deluded people will do deluded things. Selfish people will do selfish things. Angry people will do angry things and say angry things. They are just the way they are. When you accept them for what they are, you are at peace. Then you know it's karma. If it's not because of delusion that condition them into such coming negativity, they won't become what they are. So out of love and compassion, you pity them. You radiate love and metta towards them. But Jesus said, forgive them, for they know not what they are doing. Okay? This is how you overcome. You don't have to, like, are you say lo, die lo, si liao, in Hokkien, wah, jing si an ne gong, zho ga, mi du zho. No wonder an echi chum. So what? You think only you. A lot of people also like that, understand? So when you understand, you know what to do. Then like the Buddha say, with wisdom, you can overcome your karmic friction. Nothing else. You cannot avoid, you cannot do anything. But with wisdom, you are no longer deluded. You will not be afflicted. And law of karma is very funny one. Where I went through, I know. From the past, I already developed this understanding. That's why I know how to deal with it. It's like when it comes, the sign will come. Then you cannot react one. You cannot stir. You cannot have the least delusion. Otherwise, it won't stop one. It will continue to haunt you and pass you until kau kau. You know what is kau kau. Huh? And you know what must you do. The law of karma is when they come and haunt you and like create suffering for you, you have the wisdom and the understanding to endure and accept. When they got no power over you, they will reverse. They will straight away reverse. Finish. I went through a lot. That's why I can share with you. The moment I saw the sign coming, no reason on. Because this nature has been keeping with the cultivation and everything. How come all of a sudden still got this type of thing, small thing, coming? Then I knew already, coming conditioning. The bigger one going to show already. Then the moment I understand, I ask for forgiveness, repentance. Then I radiate love and metta. Then I accept all this. Then I say, please forgive this nature for what it has done. Whether knowingly or unknowingly, through the distant past until now, that it has caused any karmic negativity or what. Yeah.
or misled or whatever. This nature sincerely asks for forgiveness. May this forgiveness be accepted so that it can bring about causes and conditions to resolve all this karmic negativity amicably, so that all this karmic friction will not take effect or will be resolved amicably through understanding. So when you start to develop this understanding and don't react every time it comes, except you have to endure, like Sapu Asava Sutta and Asana. You have to understand. And sometimes, like I told you last time, I meditated the first time, the cockroach came, you remember? Tested me. I knew it's coming. So I asked for forgiveness. After I asked, the next moment of until now, don't have such problem anymore. It never come and test me or haunt me. How many of you haven't heard of that cockroach incident? Everybody heard before, so no need to repeat. Oh, you haven't heard. When I started meditation, last time I like to meditate at night, at home, one, after my wife, my children all sleep. And normally it's about 1, 2 a.m. I will come out and sit. Then, you know, that time, and you meditate, I very fast go into calmness. Then my nimitta will come. Then I become very peaceful, very calm. Then that time I can enter absorption very fast. I can cut off the sound. The passing car, middle of the night, you know, the motorbike, you know. Then when I'm in the absorption, it shut off my sense door. Then I realize, how come like that? Then the moment that I release the absorption, the sound came back now. Then I went into it again it cut off. Then I knew that these are conditioned state. Then every time when I went into that state, not long, there is this sensation on my leg here, I crossed my leg. So I thought, what is this? What can it be? Could be cockroach. Because it really like cockroach. So what I did was, I determined to find out. So mindfully, my hand went down. Touch. Nothing, no. Oh, then I tell myself, mind's projection, delusion. So, happily finish off my meditation. The next night, again, come, no? That type of sensation, no? So this time, very confident, no? Sure, again, not cockroach, the mind projection. When I put my hand down, three or four cockroach down there. How come meditate or cockroach come to your leg? Wow, that's straight away my nature tell me, you know. Karma. From your past, you kill. Even this life also, when I don't understand, my mother give me Morty and Shao Tong, I also spray. You know, so. You have to pay. You know, you kill. You cause all this. Then I ask for forgiveness. The moment I did that, from that day onward, until today, nothing. Never happened again. Then not only me, a lot of the Kayamita I teach them. There was one, the sand fly always come and sting her one whenever she goes for retreat. The moment she make the aspiration, from that day onward until now, no more. The sand fly never come. Yeah. She say, yeah, like so sway one, no. It's a lady. How come like that one? Every time I go retreat, every time I come now, and buka or no, not just sting you like that. Oh. All this you understand. This is what karma is all about. You don't play a fool with karma. That's why in Hokkien, you no play one. You play, you die. I think. That's why the Buddha very specific. No? He says, sabba papasa akaranang. What is sabba? Sabba is all. Understand? Papasa is evil. Akaranang. All evil you must avoid. Not avoid evil alone. No. All. Other one, karma, it will come to friction. You cannot run. Even arahan also have to face. But they got no more suffering because they have the understanding. The Buddha also have to face even in the last life. So these are the things. When you understand, you will know what to do and overcome them. Okay? I hope I answered your question. Yeah, sadhu. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's time for up. One question is enough for tonight. Brother Teo has gone into details. So, Salu, Brother Teo. And as an appreciation, I'd like to extend to him a token.
As usual, huh? Sadhu, huh? I regard Sadhu, Sadhu. I will pass it to Brother Chua. Huh? Come, Brother Chua. He provides transport, huh? And he is very kind. Every Friday he helps Sadhu,
Sadhu.
Sadhu, huh? Thank you so much. Huh? And he every time very generous and very kind. He donates back to your box. There's like no work done, but a lot of wholesomeness gets done. Sadhu, Sadhu. You get to rejoice, you receive merits also. Your society also receives generosity. And we also receive generosity. So no work done, but a lot of wholesomeness happens. So cultivation is the same. You think you cultivate, you think nothing happened. But your law of karma, say your karmic nature, receive a lot of wholesomeness inside them. And this will be your fruition. When you cultivate with Noble Eightfold Path, with the Dhamma, right understanding, when you are good to people, kind to people, generous to people, when you have this understanding, when you are very virtuous, incapable of negativity. So in future, when you come, you in this life, people will be kind to you, good to you. You will have good children, good family, good brothers and sisters, good friends, Dhamma friends especially. Then because you make aspiration for causes and conditions to avoid the foolish and the heedless, meet up with the wise and the enlightened one, then your life becomes so beautiful. Those heedless, those deluded, who are they? The drug addict, the gamblers, the tai long. You like to meet them or not? Huh? All those that are heedless, so many of them, the drug pusher, the drug addict, the medium, people who cheat people. Sorry, not all medium. There are some money, unscrupulous. Then you believe the fortune teller, be careful. Make sure you don't have negative karma. Then you will meet up with the right fortune teller. Otherwise, I tell you, you reap what you sow. So all this you will understand. So when you have goodness, wholesomeness, that's why the Buddha was asked, what is the highest protection? Yeah? What is the highest protection? Not the bodyguard, no. Not all the amulet, no. The highest protection is what? Your virtue, your goodness, your karmic nature. Your goodness, your wholesomeness. This is the only thing that can protect you, that can give you the good life. You reap what you sow. That's why do good because good do you. So be very, very careful about your life. When you understand this, you will never, never act negatively. You will never, never become selfish and become irresponsible. You know, whatever you do through your neglect, when you neglect your children, when you neglect your role as parent, as children, as spouse or whatever, this becomes your coming inheritance. In future, when you come, you become the victim. People will do back to you. So if you care for them, love for them, do all the right thing for them, when in future you come, you will have parents, children that respect you, treat you very well, care for you, sacrifice for you, understand you, never force you to do the thing that you don't like to do. That's why when you understand this, you are incapable of selfishness, negativity or emotional negativity. You will never scold your wife, beat your wife. Because in future when you become another person's wife, if there is karmic condition, they will scold you, beat you, abuse you, divorce you, and disown you. You did to people, understand? So law of karma is very powerful when you understand. When you have right view, you become incapable of doing all those things. You become a very responsible person. That's why when you have right responsibility, right duty, you have right Dhamma. Because you understand all this is not worth doing. That's why you cannot become selfish, you cannot cheat. You will have a lot of kindness, a lot of goodness, a lot of
understanding. You will speak gently, pleasantly. You will act appropriately. You will have a lot of gratitude, contentment, respect, and love. You will never be deceived or deluded in any way through karmic negativity. Okay? So with that, we end. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So you want to do your sharing of merits? Okay, we'll do it. Let us recall to mind all of the meritorious action and wholesomeness that we have done over the past 2 hours, or 2 hours or so. Then maybe invoke the power of these merits so that we can rejoice and share them with all the beings. Sharing our merits with the devas. Akasata chobumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anamoditwa chirang rakhantu loka sasana itta wata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sape deva anamodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menya tinang hotu Sukita hantu nyatayo Idang me nyatinang hotu Sukita hantu nyatayo Idang me nyatinang hotu Sukita hantu nyatayo Imina punyang kamena Vame bala samagamo Satang samagamo hotu Yawa Nivana Patiya Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha and Kuan Yin Bodhisattva and all the worthy ones.
Brothers and sisters, before you go back, please help yourself to some refreshments outside. And here is an announcement. Brother Sri An and other Kalyana Mitras, they are organizing a luncheon on the 9th of October, that's next month, for Brother Teo's birthday. It's also as a fellowship gathering. Those who are interested to participate, it's 80 ringgit per head. Please give your name to Sister Kelly Tan. Thank you.